What's up, founders, and welcome to the In Demand podcast, where we talk all about how to troubleshoot growth for your PLG SaaS. I'm your co-host, Asia Arangio, the CEO and founder of Demand Maven.
And I'm Kim Talarczyk, client services manager at Demand Maven, where we help SaaS companies reach their toughest growth milestones.
All right, Kim, let's get into it.
I had forgotten what campaign anxiety felt like. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, what's going to go wrong with this campaign? Because at first I was like, is it going to be creative? Are we not going to get creative done in time? Are we going to be scrambling to get it done? And for context, so my fractional CMO role, we're trying to use a new channel to promote our webinars and our lead magnets. And it doesn't actually like launch until mid to end of June, but we have to submit everything like next week. And it already was kind of like dicey capacity wise. I say dicey, but like, I mean, I believe in the team to, you know, get it done. But I woke up in the middle of the night because I was like, what's going to go wrong? I had this like feeling. And so like I checked Slack and I'm like, okay. Because my fear is like, maybe it'll be creative or maybe we won't get like the landing page done in time. I don't know. I'm just like, my anxiety is kicking in. And usually I don't need to pay attention to it. Like usually it really is a distraction. But then I log in this morning. Like I'm like, okay, it's gonna be creative. That's gonna be the thing that falls off the radar somehow. And I check Slack and actually, no, like it's fine. We have the creative. It just needs a little bit of like tweaking and we're good. And then I wake up, I go back to sleep. That was like at 3 a.m. And then I wake up for real this time and I'm ready to start the day. And I check Slack and it's the host bowed out. And like the host who was going to host the webinar for us that we're going to promote, they're the ones who are bowing out. And so we need to submit this like brief next Thursday. And so next Wednesday. So we're scrambling to find a new host to host this webinar. And I just was like, I had that sinking feeling of like, oh no, my anxiety was right.
Yeah, you had a prophecy.
And I had forgotten what this feeling felt like. I'd forgotten what it felt like. And now I'm like, oh, I had forgotten what campaign anxiety felt like. Anyway, so I just wanted to share that because shout out to all the marketers and founders out there who get the campaign anxiety like the night before. And I was like, I was hoping and praying because I was sleeping so soundly all the days before. And then last night I'm like jolted awake and I'm like, what's going to go wrong with this campaign? And this is what happened.
Right. So. And even though the webinar's not happening for another month, now the landing page needs to be updated. That's going out next week or going live, right?
Everything technically is live. So now we have to like backtrack and backpedal.
So now you have to
exactly
edit the host
and
get new images.
if we find a host in time, I'll be shocked, but I'm kind of thinking like we're either going to have to push it back and like negotiate with the sponsored newsletter provider, or we're going to have to like just promote something else. So I'm kind of thinking like it might just be promoting the something else. I'm not mad at anybody in particular. I think I'm just like, I feel like a little bit like Beyonce when she's like, I'm not surprised that this happened. God, what was that? This was in one of her like documentaries and something like terrible happened, like either during one of her concerts or before. And her disappointment was just so like, oh, like you felt it. She's like, I'm really not surprised. Of course this would happen. Of course, that's what it was. She was trying to get into the studio to practice for the VMAs and they wouldn't let her in. And like the person who was supposed to be there to like let them in was gone, like MIA completely. So like the police got called and it's like they're 5 hours delayed like into practicing and they literally could not get in the studio like all day. And she's like, her disappointment is just so
this is a really big throwback.
Yeah.
Do you remember Punk'd, the show Punk'd with Ashton
Kutcher?
Punk'd.
Yeah.
And he punked Beyonce. And I don't know why that is burned into my memory. It was the best episode because of her reaction. And it reminds me of what like they pretended to like ruin, I forget, like a Christmas show. I don't know. And like, so I almost need to go. And it's like, you feel bad, but it was, I don't know, it just was so funny.
Yeah. I felt it last night and this morning. And I just was like, no. But I mean, it's okay. Like, we're just going to have to regroup and reprioritize. We'll have a solution. And I'm thinking maybe we just do like a lead magnet, but it did suck. Cause like, it was, everything was going to, the stars were going to align perfectly. We're going to like stretch ourselves into a new direction. And now we're kind of having to backtrack, but it's fine. We'll have another opportunity next time.
And then you'll be ahead of the game in the operations of the web, of how the webinars run. Cause that's something
exactly
you've been working on updating.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. That was funny. Thank you for letting me share that. Okay. What are we talking about again?
We're talking about EOS.
Well, let's kick it off.
Let's kick it off. Okay. Asia, you told me this week that a former client reached out to you asking you about EOS, which is Entrepreneurial Operating System.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
The Entrepreneurial Operating System. It's like a framework, like a business management framework or like an operating system for your business. And so we had a little bit of a discussion about it the other day after this, because you had some thoughts. So this client that, you know, should I implement EOS in my organization? What are your thoughts? He had said, right?
EOS is so popular too. Like it, and I think it is so popular, especially among like the bootstrapped and like VC founder crowd, is because it really is, it's a system for management, but it has its drawbacks. And I also think too, there are some things about it that certainly make sense for specific types of companies. EOS claims that it can be used in any type of company. And I agree with that. You could certainly implement it in any type of company, but whether or not it'll be successful or like help you accomplish your goals is, I think, a different question.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's, they try to focus on like entrepreneurial businesses is how they put it, right? So it's a founder, younger. And I want to say when they first kicked off, they said 10 to 250 employees was like their sweet spot. Now that might have changed recently. Anyways, go on.
That is interesting. You know, so they kind of position more as like, it's for smaller companies.
Yeah.
That is fascinating to me.
Yes. And so that I feel like it got sort of this like cult-like attraction from entrepreneurs who are struggling and they're feeling like, because business is hard, of course. And it's like, oh no, it feels like shit's hitting the fan. What do I do? Oh, let me implement this and everything will be better.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, that was the focus.
That is so interesting. I don't think I knew that before, that it was more for like the smaller crowd, which is, and I think that's fascinating because of how much I disagree with EOS working in small businesses, actually. So the core tenets of EOS, and
I took some notes to remind myself of them, but go on and I'll fill in.
Okay, perfect. I'll lean on you then to like, fill in any gaps that I have. But okay, so some of the core tenets are, first, it gives you a management system in terms of like meeting cadence. And there are different types of meetings that you have. I feel like it's...
Yeah, I think it's sort of like, here's, you should be meeting every week as a leadership team and other departments. And it should be on a regular cadence at the same time on the same day. And it should have the same agenda to make sure you are talking about certain things every week and regrouping and solving issues. So
and
it's like
the L10,
setting up the,
I think.
What's that?
That's the L10.
Yeah, and the L10, I think, is specifically for the leadership team.
Right.
And then I think they basically say, too, other departments can kind of run, too. It's not called an L10.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to earmark this, but that's because EOS also, I think they basically say, your leadership team is getting together and you're getting organized and following these processes first. And then it cascades down into the rest of the business,
right?
Which is also where I feel like small companies fall short, because it's like, you're only so big. So you're just implementing EOS across the whole company very fast. And it's not always that simple.
Yeah, we'll dig into that. So there's like the meeting cadence that it wants to specify. Then there's right metrics. So that's where we get introduced to concepts like the scorecard, where EOS really encourages measuring and tracking your leading indicators for success, and also any other indicator that ultimately translates to either growth or contraction in the business. So if something's not performing well, that probably means like you're going to have a bad quarter. If something's performing extremely well, you're probably growing in some kind of way. And I think that they want you to limit it, if I'm not mistaken, to like 10 or 15. Is that the number?
Yeah. And I think even because there's the VTO, the Vision Traction Organizer that they set up, and those there should be, and I want to say it's 3-ish or maybe 3 to 5 that I think those actually go on the VTO, and those are supposed to give like a pulse of the company, like what, and that could be different for everyone. Like you, I just said, if these things are faltering, that means that needs to be solved right away. That's a problem. That's, and this is like the indicator that the company is doing okay. And that could even be like cash on hand, whatever it is. And that's set, like that's a leadership team thing. But yeah, so those are small. I know that there can be more for everybody in their scorecards, because of course, different people in the company, different departments are going to have their metrics.
Exactly.
Their scorecard they're following, yeah.
And then there are other core tenets of this. Right person, right seat.
Yeah.
So this kind of speaks to hiring. So we got to make sure we have the right people in the right seats. Otherwise, EOS does not work. And I think that they even acknowledge that if you don't have the right people in place, EOS doesn't make sense, because they're either more like on the individual contributor level and maybe not have like the ability to extend into more strategic work, or it's like your team might just be too small, like literally to have that be meaningful.
Yes. Oh, and that's what I was going to say. I think they tagged like accountability chart. So not just an org chart, but so part of the people, right seat is creating an accountability chart. So everyone actually has very specific things they're accountable for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, that is written and transparent for everybody in the company. So there's like transparency and accountability that comes with that. And it's not like you have people, like leadership should know what everyone's doing and what they're accountable for in the company. And then that's sort of visually represented like an org chart, but they call it accountability chart. And I do, EOS plays into that, like right people, right seat means they fit your culture that you are setting. So are they a culture fit? It talks about capacity. Does this person actually have the capacity to do what we want them to do? They also, the other one was desire. So like you're sort of looking at people from this framework or perspective of that as well. Like, do they have the capacity and the desire to do what we're asking them to do? Because that all needs to be fixed and set before you're moving forward trying to achieve your company goals.
Yes. I forgot about the accountability matrix. I feel like the expectation matrix is similar and based off of that, if I'm not mistaken, which...
Yeah, where does... Because you use that, which I like. And I don't know if I learned that from EOS or...
Yeah, I don't think it's from that.
Yeah.
So the expectation matrix... So for context, for everyone listening, the expectation matrix is kind of like an accountability matrix, but I think it goes deeper. So it's more like... what's the responsibility that person has? And you list like the 10 to 15 top responsibilities that person has. And then you very clearly define what's the priority level for this, like at any given time. And then what does not so good look like? Like if they were executing that, what does not good look like? What does good look like? And then what does great look like? And it creates a very clear artifact for conversation around what is this person's role. But it goes beyond just like the bullet point list of the job description, because it actually forces the manager and the leader to actually define, like, what do you expect this person to do? But I actually got this from my good longtime friend, Claire Swellentrop of Forget the Funnel. And Forget the Funnel, I know they really like EOS, but I think that I'm actually not sure if Claire designed it herself. I think she might have actually. She might have designed it herself, but I want to say it was inspired by the accountability matrix.
Yeah.
But yes, I do remember that piece of it and thinking like, okay, yeah, like that makes sense. And I agree. I think it should be certainly transparent. I think everyone should know what everyone's responsible for in some kind of way. So it's not confusing when someone either doesn't take something or when they do take something and or when there's confusion about who should take something. So yeah, I actually like it for that a lot. And then the only other thing I can remember from EOS is the relationship of the visionary and the integrator. EOS really, it talks about these two roles in the company from a strategic level of there's someone who is setting the vision for the company. They're like the visionary. And then there's the person who's integrating that vision for them, probably more like operational type.
Like I would, like a general manager or a COO are titles that I might throw under that integrator name.
Those titles, otherwise it's a chief or co-founder who has those roles and responsibilities.
Right.
But that's only assuming that, like, that makes sense for that person, because not everyone is going to be a good integrator. Like, you really need someone who's somewhat, like, process-minded and system-minded and likes doing that work, because visionary is, I think, a very different space to be in. And then actually translating that into, okay, now what tactically needs to happen in the organization to make that vision come true is a different skill set, I think. So it doesn't literally have to be a co-founder, but it could, because two co-founders could certainly be the visionary. And then maybe you have like a GM or president or COO or head of operations. We've seen that before in companies, but yeah. And then is there anything else I'm missing? What else is part of EOS?
So the other part is issues.
Oh, that's right. Issues tracking. Yes.
Right. So how do you, they call it IDS. So identify.
Discuss and solve.
Identify, discuss, and solve. Yes. Mm-hmm. EOS talks about the importance of like keeping an issues list, having key issues for the leadership team that, and obviously the priority, like we talked about, would be things that are stopping those, like the pulse of the business. If things aren't going right, that's obviously a priority issue. But then also learning how to get uncomfortable with like bringing up issues and trying to find the root cause or the actual core. Like a lot of times you could one, talk in circles and never solve things, or you could also think something, call something the issue, like, well, this person is getting too many customer complaints. This is just a random example, but it actually could be something. It might not be the customer complaining that's the problem. It could be the communication or the messaging that's going out from the, you know, customer support team. I don't know. That's an example of, okay, you're going to define the issue and then discuss it as a team and come up with a solution and then implement those solutions.
Yes. Which I actually love issues tracking, but I only, and like the solving part of the process, but what I, this can fall apart if you have no internal pressure or process to actually do that. And EOS in theory like does give you that, but at the end of the day, if you do not have a issue solving or problem solving culture, issues tracking is meaningless. Like you're literally just going to track it and do nothing. And like you'll talk about it, but no one's going to take any real action. Like
right. And it does take practice and like learning how to actually run a good IDS meeting or
exactly.
Portion of your meeting.
Like yeah.
You sometimes getting down to the priorities and what really is an issue, it is hard to figure that out.
What else is part of EOS that we didn't cover?
We talked about this a little bit, but I think vision was the other thing. Like everything starts with, there's a vision and, you know, a 1 year and a 3 year and 10 year mm-hmm. targets. Those 10 years are very supposed to be lofty, but it's, and then it's supposed to be transparent throughout the whole organization. So everyone has this idea of like where the ship is headed. And that's like really what that 10 year is for. And it's supposed to be conveyed and sort of like sold to the company so that mm-hmm. everyone's on the same page and kind of knows the important parts of the business.
Okay. Anything else?
I think that the one thing, when you said visionary and integrator, I could be wrong on this, but I was first introduced to EOS through the book Traction. I feel like mm-hmm. that's like the main book that explains the process. I don't think they introduce visionary and integrator in that
really?
Book.
Really? In that book?
And,
oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I wonder, now there's another book that talks specifically about that relationship, and I'm going to forget what it's called. I've read that one as well. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it was added on. Like EOS lends itself to that. One thing I think, like you can do EO, I think some people get hung up on the visionary and integrator.
Totally.
And it doesn't make sense in a lot of cases. But that's what made me think the original kind of framework operating system, I don't think like needs that. Like you don't need to assign a visionary and an integrator.
Right. It's almost, I think it's more, it's revealed. Like there are people in the organization who might actually be doing that already. And it might actually be more like it's discovered rather than assigned.
And because, you know, a big part of EOS, what we talked about, is the vision and like whether it's the CEO, the founder, whoever, like there has to be a vision for the company that is relayed to everybody. So everyone's sort of marching the same beat and in the same direction.
Exactly. Exactly. And ideally, like, that is the CEO that is setting that vision and laying that framework. So those are, that's, so it sounds great on paper.
It does.
It sounds amazing on paper. Where does it fall apart? And I want to hear your answer first.
Oh, goodness.
Because I know you have a lot of thoughts.
I know. It might be controversial. It's controversial. I don't know. I'm curious to hear people's thoughts. Because, yeah, I think great systems are great, right? I mean, there's a lot of business books out there. Yeah. And you had said where it falls short or where it breaks apart.
Where does it fall apart? Yeah.
So I do think, so if you can read that book, Traction, and it may, EOS, it's very set up to sound like this amazing, like, if you just implement this system, like, your company is going to be on the right track and you're going to achieve all the goals you want to achieve. And of course, it has to be written that way, and it seems like simple. So I have seen people they're sort of blindly or rotely maybe kind of following this process and all the tools that are in the EOS toolbox. And it can either fall short or not land with the company. And I think a lot of times, like, that entrepreneurial founder who's stressed and doesn't feel organized needs a system to come in. And EOS is packaged up very nicely. But it needs to, it's funny because it reads like it's simple, but this is a little bit too where EOS gets me, because it's sort of set up that you need an EOS implementer to come in and implement it for your company, because they know every toolbox, every tool, like, the back of their hand. Oh, we're going to pull up this template and there's kind of a lot of things that get put into this system. The 5-5-5 and the template for the meeting and there's just a lot of things that you can. So what I see is the actual ways that it's supposed to help your business get lost in having to implement all these things. And a lot of this, like we had said, starts with a leadership team. And if you're a small company that doesn't really have a leadership team kind of set, it's almost like it's sort of forced. And now all of a sudden we're going to start making everyone on our team follow this exact cadence and this exact agenda of a segue and the scorecard. And it feels like it doesn't always land right.
100% agree. The metaphor or analogy that I'll give here is, if you are a bootstrap founder or you're a pair of co-founders, and if you have a very flat organization, meaning you've got, maybe you have full-time employees, maybe you also have some contractors, but it's a flat organization, meaning there's no management or director level in between you and all of your individual contributors. What ends up happening is, if you implement EOS to the T, like, you're incorporating everything, like, you're not kind of picking pieces of it and implementing it, which is what I'm going to recommend. And I feel like you would recommend too, Kim. But if you, like, implement it in its pure form, those meetings that you have, those L10 meetings or whatever they are, all those different types of conversations you're going to have with that team, it's literally going to be, you're the king holding court. And because you don't have any manager or directors. Again, if you have a flat organization, and you might have some folks who are more strategic contributors to some extent, but for the most part, it's going to be you holding court. The moment issues and things come up, people are going to feel like, well, I don't know if I can say that, or because, again, like, they're individual contributors. And I've seen this a million times where founders try to implement EOS to its purest form, and they have that meeting and they do issues tracking or they do scorecard discussion. And it's a lot of crickets because, well, one, most folks they might not understand, like, what is a true issue in the company that's preventing and blocking goals and, like, progress. Because, again, they might not be at that strategic level of being able to clearly discern, oh, yes, this thing is actually preventing us from meeting our goals. And then similarly, you talk about that scorecard, or you pull up like that one, like, metric sheet that you mentioned that I'm going to forget the name of, but you pull that thing up and it's like, okay, guys, well, what's working and what's not working? Or, like, how are we doing? And again, if they're not at that strategic level of being able to clearly communicate, okay, here's what's preventing growth, you're just a king holding court. That's literally what's happening. So this is where we find that, again, if you're trying to implement EOS, you do have to have the right people in the right seats for that reason. But also, I just find it doesn't really work if you have a flat organization. And also, most of your individual contributors are not at that strategic level and also might not be empowered to have that discussion. Because the other thing that I see, and we've seen this a million times, a founder wants to implement EOS or a CEO, either one. But because that organization was so flat for so long, those individual contributors don't know necessarily how to work together without like direction from the founder or without like a direct order or what have you. So they haven't been empowered over time to have discussions and to creatively or strategically solve issues. Now, if you've been creating that culture, amazing, great for, you know, you probably will have more success with EOS. But if you're feeling frustrated with how things are running in the business, you read that book, you feel like, oh, I can do this overnight. And then you do, I think you're going to be disappointed because your ICs just aren't, they haven't been empowered or enabled long enough to have like real conversation with you about like what's going on. So we've seen that a lot where it's like, literally crickets. Like we have the IDS meeting or whatever it is. And it's like, okay, guys, what's going on with growth? And it's like, no one knows what to say or that they should say it.
And then it becomes a distraction, I think, because it's like these individual contributors or other people in the business have to do things every day to keep the business going.
I think like they're taking up their time.
You're right. So there's a lot. Well, you said, which we'll talk about, I think, in a minute. Taking pieces from it is great. If you are fully implementing it, you probably want to have at least more of an established leadership presence. Mm-hmm. And you're working on it at the leadership level, which is what EOS says.
Right.
But even that, it's really hard. You have to be careful to roll it out and have the right people that are rolling it out in the right way and not just the CEO or one person that says, I'm going to now implement this in the company and it's going to solve our problems.
And some of the like pushback that I've heard from folks on this too has been, well, my individual contributors are strategic. And my pushback has always and forever been, of course, like you can be strategic at virtually any level, but are they being strategic at the tactical execution level or are they being strategic from the business level? Because EOS makes more sense when you're working with contributors at that business strategy level. So for example, if you know that activation is an issue, is your team able to have a strategic conversation about, okay, is this a problem? How do we solve it? Can they actually have that conversation? Who on your team flags that as the issue? But it can't be the CEO. Because again, it's just a king holding court at that point. So like you might as well not have the L10 or whatever it is. Like you might as well just be like, hey guys, this is a problem. We're going to solve it. Here's how.
Right.
And
otherwise, at that point, the CEO should read traction, get sort of those tools in their toolkit, but it doesn't need to be EOS is implemented across the whole company.
Exactly.
Yeah. But they can now know how to approach things, how to now relay things down to the team, how to make sure all the individual contributors do have some sort of scorecard or metric so that you actually are knowing if everyone's performing. And it could be something small, like, you know, a receptionist, outdated term, maybe, sorry, but could be like you're trying to get two rings instead of three rings on the phone call, right? It's and just as a silly example, like
I thought you meant like Thanos rings, like Marvel Thanos. I definitely thought you meant Thanos rings.
Oh my gosh. See, because that is a very outdated example that I just gave.
No, it was great. My millennial brain was like, oh yeah, like it, like Marvel.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, like going back to your point though, yeah, like it doesn't always translate to that level as well. And you might as well just like pare it back a little bit or use it, but use the parts that work.
So yeah, what are the parts that you like and how would you implement that?
That's a good question. Okay, so it's funny because I like everything in isolation, but I think every company is a different vibe. And I think you need to use different parts of it to make it work for you. But I don't think you need everything. So like if you have a flat organization, I think the parts that make a lot of sense are you probably do need a scorecard of some kind, even if it's just for you. and it's something that you manage and like you review yourself, and maybe you give a few people like, hey, I want you to track this number and update it in the spreadsheet or whatever. Like maybe you delegate like the actual like pulling of certain numbers or what have you. But I think a scorecard makes a lot of sense. And then, yeah, like those that like 3 to 5 KPIs or metrics that you're talking about, that's like these are like the high level. Like if we're not performing here at this level, then something's super wrong.
Like overall health of the business.
I think that makes a ton of sense. I would highly recommend that. The thing that I love, like my absolute favorite part, is issues. And that's actually something that I'm working on with my team in my fractional CMO role, which is getting them comfortable with identifying issues. Because I think part of the challenge is like, well, what's an issue? Like, what does that mean? And then two, making sure that they feel empowered and confident enough to actually say it. And then once, because I think the hardest part is getting them to identify it. And then the second part is now we've got to discuss and solve. And I love that part of the process. The challenge with that process, though, and where it falls apart is, again, if you don't have a team of folks who are maybe experienced in the discussing and the solving it, like I think it's easy-ish to get people to identify things. But sometimes if folks don't have the experience, they might not identify that as an issue. And so it usually, again, it ends up, what ends up happening is the person with the most experience kind of is the one that, I don't want to say like dictates the meeting, but I don't want to say steamrolls people either, because that's not accurate. But you end up leaning more on that one person or a couple of people, and it doesn't actually really become like, this is a team issue. And we're all bought into solving it.
Right. And it's not empowering for anybody.
Right. Like, again, you might as well just hold court and like.
Yeah. Which is why I think, you know, with EOS, it really, when they say it starts with a leadership team too, it's like the leadership team is trying to get on the same page with the vision, the 1 year, 3 year, 10 year. Once you have that, you have the key metrics, your health metrics you're looking at. And there's probably a few key things that need to be solved to help move the business forward in the next 90 days. Right. And then did we say rocks? That's what they call their goals.
Oh yeah, rocks. That's right. I love and I hate rocks.
Yeah. And we should talk
about rocks.
Yeah. And because, okay, there's like people have OKRs. Mm-hmm. Like is an OKR the same thing as rocks? Because I know you do OKRs in the business you're in now with the fractional CMO.
Yeah, it's funny. And I love hate OKRs as well. There is no perfect goal system except for the one that you make for yourself. And even then, you're going to change it over time, in my opinion.
Right. But, and the whole point is things should be decided on and get done.
Like the whole, yes, rocks. Okay. So they're not the same thing necessarily as OKRs because rocks, if I recall correctly, are kind of like strategic priorities. They may or may not have like quantifiable metrics or key results. But rocks to me are kind of like, they're kind of like key projects, which is a term that I use internally. Key projects to me is, this is the most critical thing that we need to address, execute, or tackle in some time frame. But it's permissible for it to be a task or a project. Now,
correct.
OKRs, so in my opinion, the times where it makes sense for OKRs to be a task or a project are when you're leading a project team, a product management team or an engineering team or both. Tasks and projects as OKRs is less acceptable to me when it comes to like a sales or marketing team. To me, if you're going to have a task or a project, it should just be a key project or a rock. Like you could make that a rock, which I completely forgot about that concept from EOS. But yes, thank you for reminding me about it. But it's not technically an OKR. To me, OKRs are quantifiable, measurable performance indicators, and they should feel like stretch goals. And ideally, they're not always a task or a project. But that's feedback actually that I got from an ex-Googler who also was, I think her role was project management actually. But she oversaw many different types of projects, and she identified that OKRs, when you make the key result a task, like it's not, if you're product management team, different story, or engineering team, different story, probably should be a task. Like, yes, push this feature. That's a great key result, you know, before end of Q2. But she very much was adamant that like, unless you're running those types of teams, and if it's a different type of team that you're running or managing, like you really should not make a task a OKR, like an actual like key result. But anyway, I digress. I know that there's a lot of opinions about OKRs. We certainly have ours, but rocks to me are, it's a key project that you want to make sure to tackle.
Right. And rocks are supposed to get done in 90 days.
In a quarter. Yep.
And you're only supposed to have a few, if I'm remembering correctly.
Like 3 to 5, I think, is the max.
It's, of course, there's day-to-day work that you're doing, but it's like these things are getting done so that, and they align with the one-year vision.
Yes. And they certainly could address issues as well.
Right.
If it's like a big one.
Yeah.
If it's a, like a super big issue. But yeah, the issues process is definitely a fave. Goal setting and like goals tracking. So like there are just so many goal setting frameworks and like milestone frameworks. So our version of ROCs really is key projects. But they're not, I would say we don't necessarily discuss them as we got to make sure we get this done in you know, Q2, which is a change that I would like to implement on the fractional CMO side. Because I do think we need to be a bit more diligent about like, okay, here are OKRs, but here are the key projects that we really want to commit to. And that may have an impact on the OKRs, either in negative or positive ways. This key project is really important. We got to make sure we get it done. It might mean sacrificing an OKR. I digress. So I'm like touch and go, I think, on ROCs. Like, I think it just is like whatever goal tracking process makes sense for you, use that because ROCs is not perfect. OKRs aren't perfect. And there's so many different thoughts on and opinions on how it should be leveraged. And then also too, like OKRs, I think doesn't always make sense with small teams. So like scorecard tracking is actually really nice in that way because if you have a small team, if you have a small operation, you probably don't need to be tracking like 30 things like across the board. It's probably literally only 10 things that actually really truly matter. And it's probably not bounce rate or like something like so minuscule doesn't really mean much.
And then the scorecard, when you're reporting on it weekly, you're saying on track or off track, and that's it. You're actually not talking about it at all during that meeting.
Right.
And if you say off track, whoever's running the meeting is likely taking a note on the side because a lot of off tracks week over week probably means it goes on the issues list because why is it off track or something's wrong? We need to have a discussion. And then that there is an IDS during that hour and a half meeting.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So yeah, in that sense, that kind of structure and keeping a narrow focus on everyone being on the same page about the metrics that were like, what could be an issue and what could not be, that's helpful if you're operating in that way, like with the scorecard like that.
And I think the only other thing that I like the most about EOS is it's probably like some of the meeting cadences, not all of them, because I think some of them are, it's too much.
Well, and I think people have to, and we've seen too, people implement, because there's, and I mentioned this before, the segue, like there's, you know, templates. So that hour and a half meeting has a segue that's 5 minutes and everyone has to like say something. I think it's something, is it something great or something good? There's a way they phrase it. And you're not supposed to talk. Everyone doesn't have 5 minutes. You're just supposed to say something. And so, but if that's being forced and that's not sort of your vibe, your meeting vibe, like it can be like, okay, like it can be awkward.
Yes.
But we've seen people like, there's people that it's like awkward because it's like, this feels weird. But if you're just doing it in your normal way that you might get together to start a meeting, right?
Exactly.
Like, don't call it a segue. Do whatever you do.
Right. There definitely is a certain level of rigidity that some of those meetings can have. And if, depending on the, like, if you have a remote company, and which most Bootstrap founders are, I just don't know. it is weird to observe that. I think there might have been a couple of examples of this that we've seen. But yeah, and especially too, if it's a team, if you're trying to have that meeting, but then also it's a team of like individual contributors who, again, don't contribute at that level. So it does feel weird.
You know, one thing, I don't know if we talked about this yet, process, not just meetings, but a big EOS thing is documenting the processes of the company. And I think the way is what one of the tools in the toolbox, right?
Ooh, I forgot about the way.
So all your input, and I like this, and this is, you know, this is what, I mean, obviously companies should do. It doesn't need to be called the way, but basically you're thinking, what are your core, what are the essential core things that are like running your business, like processes and whatever, customer, whatever it is. And those need to be documented. And I think they use the 80-20 rule in this. Like everything doesn't need to be written down to a T. Use the 80-20 rule to like capture like the most important things. They're documented and everyone in the company has access to it. So everyone understands like the inner workings of like the core processes that actually run your business.
Yes, which the way is just rebranded SOPs, standard operating procedures, which is, but that is so funny because I completely forgot it because it's just SOPs to me.
It's SOPs. Yeah. And I
it's
like,
SOPs.
That's what we use, SOPs.
Yeah. Which on the Demand Maven side, so like internally at Demand Maven, huge believer in SOPs. I don't think I would have been able to run my business without them. Like because I needed to be able to bring in new resources at the drop of a hat. You know, like if we get a lot of projects, I got to be able to bring in folks, train them, kind of show them like, this is what I need to get done. These are the requirements. And this is what my expectations are. I don't like it. Just it wouldn't have happened if we didn't have SOPs. And then similarly, internally, there are like, when I think about the fractional CMO work we're doing, it's yeah, like the things that are the most critical, we have SOPs on for sure. So product marketing, for example, is one that we're kind of building out now. Even though the team has already done everything, this the fact that like it gets documented, it gets put in a place that is safe. Someone core leaves, you always know like what happened, like what did that person actually do or set of people and how did they work together? And There are going to be a few others like this too. Off the top of my head, like we really don't have a strong content marketing process right now. The head of marketing who was on deck before I joined, and even during I joined, I think like they just handled it all, and it wasn't really clear what the process actually was. At least to my knowledge, I could be wrong. Maybe there is an SOP somewhere tucked away, and we just got to find it and like re-earth it. But we know that those are high ROI, high revenue generating activities for us to do, and so it makes sense to create some structure around it and to ensure that it's getting done and that you know like exactly how it's getting done. So yeah, I forgot about the way, but thank you for the reminder.
You know, the other one we didn't really talk about is core values.
Oh,
and I know.
Oh my gosh.
I feel like you're going to have opinions on this. And this is part of the VTO, the vision of the company. And you are like, you know, there's a culture you're creating. So part of this is core values, and EOS does provide exercises to help you do this. If I'm going to jump ahead to where I feel like this falls short when people are implementing EOS, is it can feel very forced. Like, okay, we just locked ourselves in a room and came up with some core values. Here they are, company. And that can feel like sudden. Now, a lot of companies already have, and more, I think it's maybe over the last 10 years, 5 years, I don't know, it just seems maybe 10, right? I just feel like core values, it's people are putting it on their website. It just feels like something that sort of happens naturally. But so I do like the core values, and but the idea of EOS is like, you need to have core values and you need to agree with them, like come up with them as a leadership team and agree on them. And that's going to help even like your co-founder realize, this is what EOS says, okay? Your co-founder realize, you know what? I actually don't think I'm in line with those values. And your 10-year vision for the company, yeah, you know what? I'm out. Now, that's a little bit like fable-ish to me.
It's
like,
aggressive.
That's the idea. And I think, again, maybe one of the other things I think I knock on EOS is that it reads a little, that's a little bit of an oversimplified version. A little bit of a fairy tale of what might happen, right? Oh, my co-founder left and it was great because he got another great job and founded his own company. And then I had another co-founder come in that was perfectly aligned with my vision. That's really the story that's told, which I don't know if that actually really happens. Maybe it does.
So funny.
Yeah.
I feel like we've seen the exact opposite at Demand Maven, at least. So I can't think of a single founder that we've worked with who has had an actual core values list.
That's funny, really?
Like when you think about all of our bootstrapped clients and like the handful of VC that we've worked with, I guess more than a couple handfuls, so few of them have actual core
values.
That's
true. Or if they have it, it's not shared.
It's like in their head or
it was written somewhere a while ago and it's not part of their
actual real operations or decision making.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like a document they created. I take that back. I think that there are two that, if I had to guess, probably do actually have core values. So if I had to guess, and if you're listening right now, please let me know if I'm right. But I think Will Critchlow from Search Pilot probably has a core values list. I would put money on that. And then I think Rand Fishkin probably does for SparkToro. He definitely did for Moz because tag fee. Everyone knows tag fee, or at least if you were in that Moz world, like you knew what tag fee was.
Yep.
And tag fee was both blessing and curse, I think. Like in some ways, like it was so clear like how to leverage it. But at the same exact time, it could be leveraged in a way that like things could get, definitions could get stretched. And I think like sometimes it would also create outcomes that were not ideal. But all that to say, I would bet money that Rand has them now and that they're probably different than what he started with for SparkToro at least. So those are my two bets. So I'm so curious. We should ask Will and be like,
we should.
Do you have a core values list? We're just curious. But yeah, when I think about most of the founders that we've worked with, again, if you're not ever expecting to hire executive leadership or even like management level folks, you probably don't feel like you need to create a core values list. And also too, like if you don't like managing, if you don't see yourself as a leader, like a core values list is probably just like another box to check. And then like you go to ChatGPT and you're like, you know, pump out a core values list for me. And it's got stuff like bias towards action and owner. If I see one more core values list that says bias towards action, I'm going to lose my mind.
That feels like a trendy one. So is this you against core values?
So I think it's actually an amazing exercise to go through if and only if you are going to take it seriously and actually use it. But I think if you have no intention of either of those things, it's going to be a waste of your time. But do I think successful companies have them and maybe are like operating from them in some kind of intuitive or meaningful way? Absolutely. Whether they are documented or not, you probably have a list of core values. It might not be worth documenting and sharing and like actually leveraging, but you're operating off of a certain set of assumptions. So for example, everyone loves to say we're data informed or we're data driven, but are you actually? Because I see a lot of founders not doing data-driven work. In fact, it's very emotional. It's very like, well, this feels like it's bad or whatever.
Yeah, because the idea is if there is a big problem or a should we go in this direction or develop this or this customer is giving us a hard time, should we, like, it's like your backstop of like, we can look back at our values and we, as long as we're moving forward with those in mind, like, will know it's helping you in some ways steer the ship. The bigger companies have an easier time with this, right?
Right.
Because it makes sense. So smaller companies,
it's harder. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember where I heard this, but I remember someone saying that core values are really discovered. They're not decided. And I remember thinking it was so poignant because you don't just wake up one morning and just decide like these are your core values, because it's always aspirational and it's hardly ever rooted in the truth. So like everyone puts bias towards action and everyone puts data driven. Those are like the two that are on every core values list. And in some cases that's actually true, but in a lot of cases it's aspirational. We want to be like this, but we're not actually using it to decide and like drive a decision or make progress. So for example, if you have issues that are in your business, and if you say, well, we're data driven, that's a core value of ours, I would expect you to then be data driven when you try to solve that issue. But if you start making assumptions, if you start pulling assumptions out of thin air and like guesses, that drives me crazy. Because if you claim to be data-driven, but that's how you're actually trying to solve a problem, then you're not data-driven. It's not a core value. But if you don't claim that, I'm not going to hold you. Like, if you're not making that claim, like, okay, data-driven is not part of our core values. It's okay to be messy. Great. That says a lot about your process and, like, how you solve issues. And that's not a bad thing, because you might decide that, like, that is lower priority than maybe the 20 other things that you have in mind. So. But my thing is just, I love a core values list. We have core values at Demand Maven. And even though I don't like shout them from the rooftops, I mean, the team is really small. I don't feel a need to do that. I do my best to embody them as much as I can. but it's so natural to me that I don't think about it anymore.
Right. And I think, so that's really the direction of, there's this vibe that you have as the founder owner.
Right.
And you're, as you bring people on, like you are sharing that. Of course, then that changes as you get bigger, but right, it starts like how you're doing with Demand Maven.
Yeah. So like when I think about some of the companies that we know and also ones that we've worked with, when I think about uplisting, if I were to sit Vince down and if I were to ask, well, what were your core values? He probably wouldn't have thought to say this. Maybe he would have, I don't know. But one of the things that he might have added to his core values list was, we are, design and UX are a high priority for us. Like we care, like some companies say that they care about customer experience and design, but no, like we really care about UX and design. If it is not pretty, I don't want to see it. Mm-hmm. And I think like, I can't remember if he came from a design background or not, but I remember when we worked with Uplisting, like they really cared about that. And when I think about other companies we worked with, like you could tell that that was important to them. Design and UX, like you could see it in the site, you could see it in the app, you could see it in every graphic they ever made. Like he had a standard. And I think that would have been one of his core values for the company.
Yeah.
He also, I think everyone says, you know, we want to be customer led and customer driven and yada, yada, yada. But I think like he was pretty laser focused, I would say, on the customer. He really valued a lot of the insights that we brought. A lot of times the question was like, how do we use it? But it was still great to like have it. And then if I think about, we never worked with Balsamic, but if I think about like what would Peldy put on his core values list, I probably would say product and like the product experience and being seen as a product leader in the space by other product leaders, I think would be a core value probably of some kind. Like something in that area of like, not just like we're PLG, but like we are a product-led company and we believe like the future is product and we want to create a product-led organization. I think he probably would say something like that. But I'd like, you know, when I think about hearing him speak and hearing him talk about Balsamic, that's kind of how I imagine him saying something or adding that to his list of core values. What else? Anything else about EOS? You know, we haven't really talked about like picking and choosing.
Picking and choosing what?
Like picking and choosing the parts that work. And I think like, because that is what we've seen the most. And you know, in my mind of the bank of EOS things, which there are a lot of things I definitely forgot about, but I think I forgot about them because they really don't apply as often as you'd think that they would. And I think also some things are just kind of innate to my leadership style. So like the way is SOPs, for example, we already knew what SOPs were. So like that's inherent, like we're going to create SOPs wherever we go. And especially like at this capacity or this level of engagement. But there are other things, though, that like we haven't implemented a scorecard, but it's just because I don't think we're there yet. But it's funny because I actually might do like a key KPIs or like a executive level scorecard. Like I might ask the CEO for that and say, like, I can add the marketing ones, but we need like the sales ones and like the product ones and the blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And maybe we limit it to 10 to 15 things. And it's things like, what's our cash on hand or what's our burn or what's, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that might be something I pull for, but I might not at the same time. Like to me, I don't know that we need it yet. I feel like right now we're operating pretty well in that arena, but it could be nice for the CEO. It'd really be more for the CEO, I think, than anything.
Yeah.
But then there's like we're not going to do all the meeting stuff. Doesn't make sense. I just don't think our team is there yet. Maybe if the CEO really wanted, like he could actually implement like an L10 type meeting and it'd be me and the head of product and head of sales. And like, maybe that could be something. But again, I don't like what problem would we be solving apart from just facilitating better collaboration and better problem solving? I don't know. So yeah, if we were to go down the list, like I could kind of talk through, here's what I would probably do. But I think it's a case by case basis. Like if we were in a different company with a different team, I might be like, hell yeah, scorecard. We need that, you know? So it just depends, I think. But I don't believe in subscribing to something 100%. I think you got to take parts of what works for you because it's just going to be so rare that EOS is actually perfect, like across the board for your organization.
Yeah. And I mean, I know people have implemented it and swear by it, but I do think that has a lot to do with, you know, a little bit of personality and the type of person that's implementing it.
Or the culture of the company.
The culture of the company, how on board either the CEO or leadership is and how good of a job they do implementing it, whether they bring an implementer in to do it or not. Like mm-hmm. that all plays a role. but that's an investment.
Right. It is an investment. And I think too, you know, process books like this, we love a process book. Like I would never knock a system, especially if it helps someone accomplish a goal. But the one thing about systems, especially like this, is no one really talks about the change management process of actually, like, it's going to take you 2 to 3 quarters to like effectively get this going in a way that's going to like work. And I think that's the other thing too, is like, what do you really want out of EOS? Like, what are you hoping is going to help you accomplish? What's your jobs to be done for that? Because your goal might shift once you start implementing things, but then also you might realize that like EOS can tackle some of these things, but not all of these things. And I think that's part of it too. But yes, there are certainly teams out there that swear by it. I'm trying to think off the top of my head if I know anybody who like loves it, but I know that they're out there and that they exist. But my general advice would be to take the parts that work and then leave the rest behind. Because if you try to like, if you try to force it 100%, it's going to fall apart in some kind of way. Oh, and or it's going to alienate people in the company. So,
right. And it could be something that then as the company grows, more things are implemented. It just makes more sense.
And there are other iterations too. Like EOS is not the only operating system. I think that there are others as well. And also too, I'm actually a bigger fan of like designing your own thing. Like EOS is a framework, it's a system, and there are parts to that system. But you can, like I said, you take what works and maybe what doesn't work, you modify and you change it. And these systems and processes are not sacred. You can break rules and that would be okay. Even with something like jobs to be done, we've seen rules get broken. Now, there are trade-offs to breaking certain rules in something like jobs to be done. But as long as you understand what those trade-offs are, you can still make a good decision about that. So anyway, but I digress. I that would be my overwhelming advice to folks, is to take the parts that work, modify the rest. If that, you might leave it behind entirely. And when I think about how we've operated in other companies, even like before the fractional CMO role, I'm usually designing a system. It's usually like we're building something for that team, for that company. We might leverage some parts of EOS, but we might also leverage things just from like other, I'm not even sure if I would call it like operating systems, but just how other businesses work from what I've seen, we can kind of take that. And depending on the level that you go into, the way that a growth team operates might be different than how a product team operates, which is different than a marketing team. And so that's kind of where you get into like, you really are creating and designing your own systems for each team, like once you go like deeper in the org. But anyway, I digress. Right. Hopefully that lands and that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think we got it all out.
We got it done. We did it. Thank you for talking to me about EOS. And I'm so curious to any listeners out there, if you've had success, if you've not had success, and if you did have success, what worked for you specifically? Because there's so much inside of EOS that you could get into.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, like, what about your context made that thing work?
Right. And what little adjustments did you make that maybe were helpful? Because that's something we could take away too.
Exactly. Yeah. Would also be curious, just going off of what we've seen. But yeah. All right, cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks.